Welcome back, my friend. Are you ready for Chapter 7 in the story of Perseus? I remember the air after Atlas turned to stone, dry, thin, and wrong. You'd think the wind would roar louder, up where the stars feel closer, but it didn't. It went quiet, as if the sky itself didn't know what to do, now that its bearer had frozen mid-step, arms stretched upward forever. Perseus didn't speak. Not to me. Not to himself. He only adjusted the satchel slung over his shoulder, the one holding the head, and looked at the mountain that wasn't a mountain anymore. It shimmered in the light like sand turned to glass. He didn't feel like a victor. He looked smaller than he had a few hours before. As if each time he used Medusa's power, something was pulled out of him and didn't come back. I don't think he noticed it yet. But I did. He turned away from the sky and flew on, heading toward the coast without a map, without a plan. That's how most of our stories go, if you think about it. Great choices made after everything else is used up. He'd killed a Gorgon. He'd escaped the Grey Sisters. He'd even faced down a Titan. But now? Now he was flying low over salt water, looking for something he couldn't name. A place to land. A reason to stop. And then he saw her. I saw her too, just as he did, from above. At first, she didn't look like a person, just a dark shape against the rock. The sea crashed around her, and the spray caught the light and burst, so she seemed to vanish and reappear with the waves. She was still. That's what I remember most. How still she was, arms outstretched, chained at the wrists and ankles, her body pressed to the stone, not slumped, not limp, just held there, awake and waiting. There are many kinds of silence. The kind that comes after a storm, the kind between footsteps in a temple, and the kind that stretches when someone has been left behind on purpose. Perseus didn't speak, not yet. He just hovered in the air, staring down at the girl on the rock. The wind pushed at his cloak. The bag on his shoulder shifted slightly, but he didn't adjust it. He didn't move at all. He had no idea what kind of story he'd flown into. But I did. Perseus landed farther down the shore. Not right next to her. He could tell better than most when not to charge in. The sandals skimmed the sand and dropped him beside a tide pool, shallow and bright. His feet left marks in the wet earth. Hers did not. She didn't turn her head when he approached, just kept looking out at the water. One arm stretched above her, the other to the side. The chains ran into the rock, old and rusted but still strong. She wasn't struggling. Whatever fight she had left wasn't for the medal. Perseus cleared his throat. She didn't answer. He tried again, gentler this time. "Are you all right?" She moved only her eyes, slow, tired, and she said flatly, "Do I look all right?" He didn't have a reply to that. I don't blame him. He stepped a little closer, more careful now, like you'd approach a wounded animal or a cornered god. "My name is Perseus," he said. The name meant nothing to her. That too was clear. She looked back at the sea. A gull circled overhead, crying once before vanishing over the cliffs. The wind picked up, snapping her hair into her face, but she didn't shake it off. Perseus saw her wrists then, rubbed raw where the shackles had dug in, not freshly bloodied. That part was over. She'd been there a while. "Why are you?" he began, but she interrupted. "Punishment." The word dropped like a stone in water. He waited, but she didn't say more, so he said it for her. "Yours?" That got her to laugh. Sharp, short, without a smile. "Not mine," she said, "my mother's." It came out bitter and flat, not like a daughter defending her family, but like someone spitting out something that tasted bad. I remember how her voice sounded, used up, almost hoarse, like she'd screamed herself empty already. No more begging, no more explaining. She said her mother, the queen, had claimed she was more beautiful than the sea spirits, the Nereids, that her beauty outshone theirs like moonlight over candlelight. Perseus knew better than to comment on that. He let her speak. Not many men would have. "So Poseidon sent the monster," she said, still staring out at the sea, "to punish the land, the people. The city cried out for mercy, and they gave me." She shifted her weight, but the chains held. "I didn't argue. I was 15. My father couldn't look me in the eye. My mother said it was the only way." She turned and looked at Perseus directly then. Not frightened, not pleading. Just level, like she was measuring him. "They dressed me in white," she said, "like a bride, as if that made it cleaner." That's when I realized how long she had waited. Not just on the rock, but for someone to listen without turning away. Perseus stood there, quiet, with the sea rising behind him, the The water had begun to shift again, slowly. Neither of them noticed it yet, but I did. The water changed before the sound did. It's easy to miss if you don't know what to look for. The shoreline pulls back. Not fast, not yet. Just a little too far. The waves draw thinner. The air sharpens. It smells like something old is waking up beneath the surface. Perseus noticed it. He turned toward the sea, watching the swells break farther and farther from shore. Then he heard it. A thud, low, deep, and strange, like something enormous dragging itself through wet sand beneath the waves. Then another. And another. Andromeda didn't move. She didn't cry out. She didn't struggle. She only exhaled slowly and said, "It's coming." Perseus took a step closer to her, then stopped. "What is it?" "The price," she said. From the edge of the horizon, the monster began to rise. Not all at once. First a shape, then a shadow. Then foam broke against something that should not have been there. Harmonia does not name it. There's no name that fits. Not truly. A head too long. Eyes too many. Skin that shimmered dark green one moment and black the next. A jaw like a cavern. It was older than the city behind the cliffs. Older than the gods who made it. And it wanted her. Andromeda closed her eyes. Not in fear. Not anymore. Just in readiness. "I thought it would come at night," she said, soft. "The first night, then the second, then the third." "How long?" Perseus asked. 5 days," she said. "Maybe 6." He unslung the satchel from his shoulder and set it carefully behind a rock, as if the head inside could see without his help. Then he drew his sword. Not with a cry, not like a hero, just a clean, quiet movement. Steel against leather. Andromeda didn't react, not at first. But then she said, "Don't." He looked at her. "You don't have to die for me." "I'm not planning to," he said. That made her eyes open again. He looked younger than she'd expected, but something in his face was steadier than most. The sea monster let out a cry then, a great echoing roar that shook the rock she was chained to. It opened its mouth and the water peeled away in a rush. Perseus stepped forward. Andromeda turned her head as far as the chain would let her and said, almost flatly, "Then aim for the eyes." He nodded once. The fight itself is not a tale I need to tell in detail. You've heard those stories of swords against scale, of wings and screaming of blood in the surf. But what I remember most was her silence. Andromeda did not watch. She kept her eyes closed the whole time. She listened, though, every shriek, every crash, every moment Perseus was nearly too late. And then stillness, the sound of waves again, the normal ones, the honest kind. She opened her eyes. The monster was gone. Sinking slowly, far from shore, red blooming behind it like ink in water. And Perseus stood on the edge of the rock, breathless, seawater dripping down his arms, sword still in hand. He turned to her, not smiling, not triumphant. "Just there." And she said nothing at all. The chains didn't fall away when the monster died. Of course they didn't. That's not how these things work. The sea doesn't undrown you just because someone slays the storm, and steel doesn't turn soft just because someone finally fought back. Andromeda was still bound to the rock. Perseus stepped toward her, slowly. Sword in hand, yes, but lowered. The salt wind pressed against both of them, hard and cold. There was blood on his arm, some of it his, more of it not. She turned her head just enough to see him. "Is it dead?" she asked. "Yes." She looked away again. He waited. He didn't know for what, only that he shouldn't rush this part. Andromeda's arms had started to tremble, not from fear, but from the strain of holding still so long. Her voice was calm, but her body had been surviving, not resting. "I can break the chains," he said. She didn't answer. "Unless you'd rather I didn't." At that, she gave a small breath, like a laugh, but not quite. "You kill a monster, and now you're asking for permission?" "Yes," he said. She looked at him again. Her eyes were dark, steady. "Why?" He hesitated, but answered honestly. "Because you've already had enough taken from you." There was a pause. Then she nodded once, and he stepped forward. He used the hilt of his sword to smash the locks. Not quickly. Not because he was weak, but because he was being careful. The iron had grown tight with rust. The sound echoed off the stone louder than it should have. She didn't flinch. One wrist came free, then the other. Then her ankles. She slid down the rock, catching herself before she hit the sand. Her knees buckled slightly, but she stayed upright. Her skin bore the marks of the chains, raw and ringed in red, but she didn't complain. She just stood there, arms loose at her sides, breathing. "Thank you," she said eventually. He nodded. "What's your name?" "Andromeda." There was silence between them for a moment, but not an empty one, a resting one. She looked out at the sea. "They'll come back now, the city, my mother. They'll bring a robe and a crowd and act like this was a story with a good ending." "You don't want to go back?" he asked. She gave him a long, unreadable look. "They chained me to a rock and left me to die," she said, "because my mother couldn't keep her mouth shut." Then she looked back at the cliffs. "No, I don't think I do." They walked together along the edge of the sea, but not like people who knew what came next. Not yet. The fight was over. The monster was dead. The chains were broken. But neither of them had a direction, just motion. She didn't limp, though she could have. She didn't ask for help. I remember watching her move like someone who'd stopped expecting the world to be kind. The salt air tugged at her hair. The marks on her wrists were still red, but she kept walking, like standing still would be worse. Perseus stayed close, but not too close. He knew better than to walk in front of someone who'd just been left behind. At one point, she looked over at the satchel, the one slung carefully behind a rock where it couldn't meet anyone's eyes. She asked, "Is that what killed the Titan?" He nodded. "And the Gorgon?" "Yes," he said. She gave him a long look. "You always carry monsters around with you?" He smiled, not a big one, just enough. "Only the dangerous ones." That was the first time she almost smiled back. Then she asked him, "Where are you going?" And he said, "On, just that. Not home, not back, on." I remember how she looked at him then, sharp, like she was testing the weight of that answer. "Not back?" He shook his head. "Not really. There's someone I have to deal with. Someone who hurt you? Someone who tried to hurt my mother." She was quiet for a moment. Then she nodded. "Then go. I am. And I swear to you, there was no drama in it. No big music. Just two people, each on the other side of something broken, realizing they didn't need to explain. After a while, he said, "You could come with me." And she didn't say yes. She didn't say no either. She looked back once, just once, toward the cliffs, where the road wound up toward the city. The people there would already be preparing a welcome, a robe, a story. They'd turn her into something pure and tragic and call it gratitude. "I won't be missed," she said. "Not the way they'll say I was." "Then don't let them say it," Perseus told her. She watched him, long enough to see that he wasn't lying, and maybe more importantly, that he wasn't asking for anything in return. "I don't want to go back," she said, and he answered, "Then don't." That was all. No pledges, no great vow, no promise that it would all be better now. Just a girl who was no longer chained, and a boy still carrying something heavy. They didn't save each other, but they didn't walk alone. And sometimes that's the part that matters. I still think about her, sometimes. Not just the day she walked away from the rock, but the way she did it. Calm, straight-backed, no glance over her shoulder, as if the chains had been broken long before Perseus touched them. He didn't save her, and he would never say that he did. He saw someone who had been used and discarded, and instead of turning away, he stopped. That matters. But make no mistake, she saved herself the moment she chose not to go back. And when she stepped into the air behind him, when she climbed onto the sandals of Hermes and rose above the sea, she wasn't escaping. She was starting over. She didn't ask where they were going. He didn't ask what she wanted to be. That was the agreement between them, unspoken but understood. Forward, not backward. Not everyone gets that chance. But here's the thing, going forward sometimes means walking straight through the past. Perseus knew that, and that's where they were headed next. Not to some island paradise or the edge of the world, just back to Seraphus, where the king still sat on the throne, smug and cruel and certain Dana would never be free of him. Where every banquet was another show of power, where no one thought Perseus would return. But he was returning, not as a boy this time, not as a messenger or a burden to be sent away. He had the Gorgon's head and a purpose. And now he wasn't flying alone. Do you know what it feels like to arrive not for vengeance, but for justice? He did. And next time, I'll tell you what happened when he walked into the banquet hall. Quiet, calm, and carrying the end of a king in a leather satchel. But that's a story of stone and silence, and it deserves its own telling. For now, remember this. Not every rescue is about the person with the sword. Sometimes it's about the person who decides the story won't end where someone else left them. Andromeda did that, and Perseus saw it. Much love. I am Harmonia. Oh, before you go, one more thing, Traveler. If you enjoyed our time together in the halls of Olympus, there's a gift you can give in return. Just a little thing. Leave a 5-star rating and share this podcast with a friend or whisper it to the wind. The gods love a good rumor. And if you're curious about the mortal world, its twists, its triumphs, its tangled histories, come find me in my other podcast, History's Arrow. There, we follow the path of humanity, one story at a time. Until next time, walk wisely, speak kindly, and never underestimate the power of a good story. Your friend, Harmonia. This podcast sails out to you from Red Buoy Media, LLC. The stories we share are licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, non-commercial, share-alike 4.0 international. That means you can pass them along, remix them, and even argue with them. Just give us credit, don't try to sell them, and share responsibly. Thanks for listening, friend. Until our next adventure.